11. People who are out of phase in time, Sepp von Einem thought caustically to himself, ought to be dead, not preserved like bugs in amber. He glanced up from the encoded intel repo and watched with distaste his mysteriously and rather repellently gifted proleptic co-worker Gregory Glock in his clanking, whirring anti-prolepsis chamber. At the moment, the thin, tall, improperly hunched youth talked silently into the audio receptor of his sealed chamber, his mouth twisting as if composed of some obsolete plastic, not convincingly fleshlike. The mouth motions, too, lacked authenticity. Far too slow, von Einem observed, even for Glock. The fool was slowing down. However, the memory spools of the chamber would still collect everything said by Glock at whatever rate, and the transmission subsequently would of course be at proper time, although of course the frequency would be abysmal, probably doubled. At the thought of the screeching which lay ahead, von Einem groaned. His groan, received by the sensitive input audio system of the anti-prolepsis chamber, became processed, recorded at 20 inches of iron oxide audio tape a second. It whipped in retrograde to rewind, then released itself at 6 inches a second to be carried to the earphones well fixed to Glock's bony head. Presently, Glock responded to his reception of his superior's groan with characteristic eccentricity. His cheeks puffed out, his face turned red as he held his breath, and at the same time he grinned vacuously, his head lolling, turning himself into a parody of a brain-damaged defective. A double parody, because it was of course his own fantastic mentational processes which constituted the actual target of his lampoon. Disgusted, von Einem looked away, gritted his near-priceless custom-fashioned teeth, returned to his scrutiny of the Intel repo material which had newly been made available to him.
"I'm Bill Baron,"
the tinny mechanical voice of the Intel repo transport announced cheerfully.
"Operator of Fly 33408. Now, as you may or may not remember, Fly 33408 is a real winner. I mean, it really gets in there and tackles its job and really gathers up the stuff, the real hot stuff. I've personally been operator for, say, 50 flies, but in all this time, none has really performed true blue like this little fella. I think he, or it, whatever they are these days, deserves a vote of thanks from all of us involved in this highly delicate work we do. Right, Herr von Einem?"
Operator of House Fly 33408, Bill Baron, paused hopefully.
"The vote of thanks," von Einem said, "goes to you, Mr. Baron, for your compound eyes."
"How about that?" Operator Baron rambled on oozingly. "Well, I think we're all inspired by
the data," von Einem said. "As to the activity at the UN Advanced Weapons Archives, what specifically is meant by their code number, Variation 3, of that time-warping construct they're so devoted to?
Queer for," he thought to himself. "The UN WebEx personnel probably take turns going to bed with it."
"Well, sir,"
Operator Bill Baron of Fly 33408 answered vigorously,
"Variation 3 appears to be a handy-dandy little portable pack unit in the ingenious shape of a tin of chocolate-flavored psychic energizers."
On the video portion of the Intel repo playback system, a wide-angle shot of the portable pack appeared. Von Einem glanced toward Glock in his whirring anti-prolepsis chamber to see if the hunched, grimacing youth was receiving this transmission. Glock, however, obviously lagged at least 15 minutes behind now. It would be some time before his synchronizing gear brought this video image to him. And no way to speed it up. That would defeat the chamber's purpose.
"Did I say chocolate flavored?"
Baron droned on in agitation.
"I intended to say chocolate covered."
And with such weapons artifacts as this, von Einem reflected, the UN expects to survive. Of course, this assumed that the Intel repo were accurate. His inquiry into the certainty of Fly 33408's information brought an immediate reaction from Operator Baron.
"There are just plain virtually no house flies as intelligent as this. I give you no nitty, Herr von Einem, no nitty at all. And here's the real substance of what 33408 has captured via his multipartis receptors. I suggest you prepare for this, as it is overwhelming."
Baron cleared his throat importantly.
"Ever hear of old Charlie Fox?"
"No," von Einem said.
"Think back to your childhood, when you were, say, 8 years old, or maybe a little more. Recall a backyard, and you playing, and old
old Charlie Fox, leaning over the fence, and...
This is what your Verfluchte Fly brought back from the UN Advanced Weapons Archives?
Time for a replacement of both Baron and his dipterous insect, both of them with one arboreal American orthopterous katydid. It could carry twice the MIND receptors and recording spools of 33408, and would probably possess the same brain convolutions as Baron and his housefly put together. Von Einem felt gloomy. In fact, his depression bordered on despair. At least Theo Ferry managed to handle the tricky situation at Whale's Mouth effectively. In contrast to this, and that, more than anything else, counted. Effectively, except for the unhappy weevils and their destroyed, ridiculous crypto-perceptions, the old comrades back in 1945 would have known how to dispatch those Unmanner, von Einem thought to himself with irritable satisfaction. It's a clear sign of genetic decay to be possessed by such sub-realities, he brooded. Inferior-type basics overwhelming weak, unstable character structures, degenerate idioplasm involved casually, beyond doubt.
Old Charlie Fox, Operator Baron said, is the individual back in your childhood days who more than any other human being formed your ontological nature. What you've been throughout your adult life depends absolutely in total essence on what old Charlie...
Then, von Einem said witheringly, why is it that I failed to recall his existence?
The UN WebEx tacticians, Operator Baron said, have not as yet placed him there.
Within his anti-prolepsis membrane, the environment manufactured by Krupp und Schön years ago, which permitted him to collaborate with the conventionally time-oriented personalities linked indirectly to him, the warped, inspired protege of Sepp von Einem contemplated the message packets discharged at intervals by the data storing houses of his intricate mechanism. As always, he felt weary. The release of stimuli came too frequently for his overtaxed metabolism. The adjusting of periodic discharge control gate lay unfortunately outside his manual reach. What reached him at the moment consisted of what seemed the most miserable idiocy he had ever encountered. Bewildered, he attempted to focus his depleted attention on it, but only ill-formed fragments of the Intel repo material constellated for his mentational scrutiny. Fettered fetus of homemade apples lurching, searching. Something like pateratical outfits of lace. Iron beds of red-hot Sabretondia flashes, just jib, frib. Resignedly, Gregory Glock listened on helplessly, wondering what transistorized turret control of the chamber had gone astray this time. Medicine ice. Man. Cone-shaped melting, dripping. Away, away. As apathy began to seep over him, an interval of almost startling meaning abruptly caught his ear. He awoke. Paid rapt attention.
Operator Bayrin here, with really thrilling data on old Charlie Fox, who, you'll remember, was placed in the formative years of Herr von Einem on an alternate time path by the UN WebEx tacticians in order to deflect Herr von Einem from his chosen and militarily significant profession to a relatively harmless vocation, that of...
And then, to his chagrin, the lucid segment of verbal data faded, and the meaningless chatter... with which he had, over the years, become so familiar, resumed. Fiberglassed, windows, stained with grease, off a polyhemispheric double overhead cam, external compulsion engine, floating out, into the vast gigantic money thing making machine, diaperaceous phenomenon disintegrating, into foul, fierce pressure, spinning, spinning, lifting harsh, harsh, a breath. A beat, a being still present. Thank God. And in the midst of this, the steady but interrupted by the far stronger signal strength of the babble, the authentic Intel repo continued to make its vital point. He brought his internal attention to bear on it and managed to follow its thread of meaning. Evidently, Fly Technician Baron had gathered at last the crucial material as to the UN's disposition of its near-absolute device. With vigorous, virtually relentless logic, Jaime Weiss, the top strategist, now working under Horst Berthold, he who at one time had been von Einem's most brilliant and promising new discovery in the field of weapons inventiveness, but who had turned, gone over to the better-paying other side. This renegade had come up with the correct answer to the UN's strategic needs. To kill off Sepp von Einem was now pointless. Telpor existed. But to abolish von Einem sometime in the past, before his discovery of the basic mechanism of teleportation, a less skilled manipulation of past-time factors would have sought as its objective cheap outright murder, the total physical elimination of Sepp von Einem. But this, of course, would simply have left the field open to others, and if one man could locate the principle on which teleportation could be effectively based, then so, eventually, given enough time, could someone else. Telpor, not Sepp von Einem, had to be blocked. And it would require the presence of a uniquely strong personality to block it. Jaime Weiss and Berthold could not do it. They were not that formidable. In fact, probably only one man in the world could manage it, successfully. Sepp von Einem himself. To himself, Gregory Glock thought, it's a good idea. This, his professional, official appraisal of the tactical plan which the UN had put in motion to abort the evolution of the Telpor instrument, had now to be said aloud. Glock, selecting his words carefully, spoke into the recording microphone permanently placed before his lips, simultaneously activating the tape transport.
"They want for their disposal," he declared, "the use of yourself, Herr von Einem. Nothing else is adequate. A compliment, but one which you could no doubt do without."
He paused, considered. Meanwhile, the tape reel moved inexorably, but it was dead tape. He felt the pressure on him to produce a counter-tactic in response to what those opposed to his superior had so artfully and skillfully advanced. He murmured, half to himself. He felt now even more truly out of phase in the time dimension. He felt the gulf between himself and those, everyone else in the universe of sentient life, beyond his anti-prolepsis chamber.
"In my estimate," he continued, "your most profitable avenue of action..."
And then abruptly he ceased, because once again the random word salad noise had burbled into seeming spontaneous existence in his ears. This, however, appeared to be a radically different, startling so, interference than was customary. Rubbish that it was, it nonetheless made sense. Sense, but it had obliterated, for the time being at least, his counter-tactical idea. Could this be a UN electronic signal, deliberately beamed so as to disrupt the orderly functioning of his chamber? The thought, theoretical as it was, chilled him as he involuntarily, without the possibility of evasion, listened to the curious mixture of nonsense and meaning of the highest order. "I think, though, I see why Zubko lards, butters, marginates, and otherwise fattens up the word spore into the rather sinister male spore slogan. Their house brochure in Move E3D Cull R is directed at women consumers to fumble lewdly a metaphor, no offense meant. More fully articulated, it would read, the male spore, my dears, is as we well know, tireless in its half-crazed struggle against all sanity and moral restraint to reach the female egg. That's the way men are, right? We all realize it. Give a male, sick, spore half an inch, and he'll take 72 1/6 miles. Be prepared, always ready. A huge, slimy, slant-eyed, yellow-skinned male spore may be watching you this very minute. And considering his almost demonic ability to wiggle for miles upon miles, you may at this moment be in dire, severe danger. To quote Dryden, the trumpet's loud clamor doth call us to arms, etc. And don't forget, ladies, the handsome prize awarded yearly by Zubko Products Incorporated for the greatest number of dead male sick spores, mailed, pun, to our Callisto factory in an old Irish linen pillowcase. Attesting to, 1, your tenacity in bulking the evil damned things, and 2, the fact that you're buying our lather-like goo in 100-pound squirt cans. Also remember, if you are unable to adequately prepare yourself with a generous, expensive portion of Zubko patented goo in the proper place, in advance of marital lawful pawing, then merely squirt the spray can with nozzle directed directly into the grimacing fungiform's ugly face as it hovers 6 feet high in the air above you.
Best range,
Gregory Glock said aloud against the din of the obsessive noise in his ears.
approximately 2 inches.
2 inches! The tinny mechanical racket reeled off, accompanying him. From his eyes, Zupko's patented goo is not only
a top drawer killer of male spores, Glock murmured,
but it also blasts the tear ducts out of existence. Too bad, fella.
End brochure, he thought. End monologue. End sex. End of Zubco or Zub of Endco. Is this an ad or a contemplation of a squandered life? Check one. I know this discourse, he thought, by heart. Why? How? It's as if, he thought, I said it, as if it's happening inside my brain, not coming to me from the outside. What does this mean? I have to know.
Always bear in mind, the inexorable Din continued, that male spores have an almost appalling capacity to progress under their own power. If, ladies, you constantly ponder that.
Appalling, yes, Glock said. But 5 miles? I said all that, he realized, a long time ago, when I was a child. But no, he thought. I didn't say all that. I thought it, worked it out in my mind. A prank, a lampoon, when I was a kid in school. What's being piped to me now here in this goddamn chamber, what's supposed to be rephased sensory data from the outside world, it's my own goddamn former thoughts returning to me. A loop from my brain to my brain, with a 10-year lag.
Splup knob furp squaz.
The odd input circuit rattled away into his passive ears relentlessly. My counterweapon, Glock thought. They've blocked my counterweapon with a counterweapon, their own. Who?
Yes, sir, Nog Ferb,
the odd input circuit declared in a hearty but garbled voice.
This is good old Charlie Fox, little boy Martha, signing off for now, but I'll be back with you soon, and with me a few more chuckles to lighten the day and make things squaz, cheery and bright. Toodaloo!
The voice then ceased. There was only distant background static, not even a carrier wave. I don't know any little boy named Martha, Glock thought. And, he realized, there's more wrong. The A ending is out of the first Latin declension, so Martha can't be a boy's name. Logically, it would have to be Marthas. Or maybe they didn't know that. Charlie Fox didn't know that. Probably not well read. As I recall, from what I saw of Charlie, he was one of those self-educated simps, ignorant as hell on the inside, but lathered over on the outside with a thin layer of bits of cultural, scientific, odd, dubious half-facts, which he always liked to drone out for hours on end to whoever was listening, or if not listening, then anyhow in the vicinity, and so at least potentially within earshot. And then when he got older, you could practically walk off and he'd still be talking to no one. But then, of course, I didn't have my chamber in those days, so my own time sense was so faulty that what actually lasted only minutes seemed like years. At least, that's what they told me, those WASH psychiatrists, back in the early days, when they were testing me and setting me up so I could function, getting this chamber designed and built. I wish, for Christ's sakes, he thought mournfully, I could remember the concept for the counterweapon I had in mind, or almost had in mind, or anyhow think I almost had in mind, before that garbage started coming in over the conduit. It would have been one hell of a counterweapon to use against Horst Berthold and the UN, he was sure of that. Maybe it'll come back to me later, he reflected. Anyhow, strictly speaking, it was merely the nucleus of the counter-tactic idea. Hardly had begun to grow. Takes time. If I'm not interrupted any further, if that dratted rubbish doesn't start up again promptly the second I begin to really fatten up the original notion into something Herr von Einem can put to use functionally, right out into the field to see action in the overall struggle we're bogged so darn down in at Whale's Mouth and wherever else they're all tangling, probably all over the universe by now. I'm probably 6 weeks behind, with data stored up ready to be fed to me from, for instance, last Thursday, if not last year. Martha, he thought. Let's see, The Last Rose of Summer is from that. Who wrote it? Flatow? Lehar? One of those light opera composers. Hummel, the odd input circuit suddenly stated, startling him. It was a familiar, dry, aged male voice.
Johann Nepomuk Hummel.
You're a goldmine of misinformation, Glock said irritably, in response, automatically, to one more of garrulous old Charlie Falk's typical tidbits of wrong knowledge. He was so used to it, so darn wearily resigned out of long experience. All the way back to his childhood, back throughout the dreary procession of years. It's enough to make you wish you were a carpenter, Glock mused grimly, and didn't have to think, just measure boards, saw and pound, all that purely physical activity. Then it wouldn't matter what old Charlie Falks blabbled out, or what his pest of a kid Martha chimed in addition. For that matter, it didn't matter who said anything or what. Damn nice, he thought, if you could go back and live your life over again from the start, only this time making it different, getting on the right track for once, a second chance, and with what I know now. But exactly what did he know now? For the life of him, he couldn't remember. Pun there, the voice from the odd circuit commented. Life of you, life lived over. See? It chuckled.